This episode of Open Floor is brought to you by Ritani. Looking for an engagement ring? Check out Ritani. Shop online and your ring is made in New York and sent to you or your local jeweler. It's that easy. Go to ritani.com/sports today for their free diamond giveaway.
My biggest concern with Simmons is just like, I think he's of the vein of guys where super talented, but you kind of got to put the exact right combination of players around him to maximize his success. I think about like a James Harden, you know, guys who just need the ball, who are very unique players, unique talents. You can win with them, but you got to like do it the specific way. But the Sixers, I mean, they're in a position, you know, financially, Hinkie laid it out for them. You know, they got the flexibility and they have trade chips. You know, they should. If they are smart and they want to take Ben Simmons, they have, you know, the time and resources to build a team around him, you know, the way they want to. So I can see it both ways for them. I think Ingram is the better prospect, but I won't fault them if they go Simmons.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I am Andrew Sharp, and on the other line, we do not have Ben Golliver. We've got Jeremy Wu. What's up, man?
Hey, what's going on, man?
We had to get Golliver out of the paint. It's time to talk draft. The finals are too boring.
Yeah, right. Tell me about it.
I mean, seriously, I can only take so many shots at Kyrie. And plus, you know, the draft is like 2.5 weeks away. It's kind of sneaking up on us here. Normally we have more of a buffer between the finals and the draft. And now it's like we're going to jump right into it. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling good. I think, you know, I've kind of come around to this draft a little bit and starting to clear up, I think. A little bit. I'm ready for it. I think it's been kind of a slow roll to this point. But
so to anyone who has no idea who we are, I've been doing the mock drafts for Sports Illustrated, which is a task I agreed to in like mid-March and sounded like a lot of fun. And now every time I finish a mock, it feels like I just survived a war. and you have been in charge of the, you've been in charge of the big board.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Which I kind of feel like, do you like the big board?
I like it. I think it's a little easier, just in the sense that like, you know, you're looking at the guys in a vacuum, you know, it's not like you gotta, you know, figure out exactly who's going to go to what team and like analyze every fit. And, you know, you can just be like, who is the better prospect? And
yeah, who fits? You can kind of just sort of let it rip with the takes and be like, you know what? I don't think Henry Ellison is very good. And exactly. That's just the way it is. But I think the most interesting story of the draft right now is Marquese Chriss and his rise through the ranks. I mean, he kind of came out of nowhere when he declared. I talked to some friends on the West Coast who were like, he's a mid first round pick. Like there's definitely a lot to work with, but it's pretty raw. And now we're talking about in the top five. Where do you stand on the Chriss revolution here?
Man, yeah, it's funny. I saw Marquese Chriss play AAU basketball like 2 summers ago, and I had no idea who he was, but he was like dunking on people and like doing some cool stuff. And I was like, then I found out after the game only that he was committed to Washington. So that was the first I'd ever heard of him. And he's really kind of come on strong. I don't know if I buy him as a top five pick because I think there's some risk. Like, I don't really know who he's going to guard. He's not a great rebounder, but I think the offensive skill set is super interesting. Like, and he's, you know, he does some stuff, the highlight reel type stuff that, you know, he's always eye-catching. I think, you know, the hype is definitely kind of swinging in his direction right now.
Yeah, I definitely, anyone who just picked up basketball, he's only been playing basketball for 5 years. So that gives me a lot of hope that he can learn. One of his issues on defense is that he fouls a lot. And like, that's stuff that you can teach and sort of like teach him a little bit more discipline there. People are a little freaked out about the rebounding. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think, you know, he was talking at the, you know, at the combine. I was out in Chicago and he said his favorite player is Rudy Gay. So I don't know how I feel about that, but, you know, he's from.
Yeah, that's a gigantic red flag.
Major red flag. But, you know, he's from Sacramento. So I guess I get it. But I also think it sounded like he wants to play more on the perimeter. So that's going to be, if he really wants to be a small forward, that's a really big adjustment, you know, because he's not a super instinctive passer out there yet. You know, defensively, right, he's gonna have to pick some stuff up, but he's got the tools to do that. I think in terms of like pure upside, I mean, I think especially as at his age, you know, relative to the the rest of this draft. I mean, there's a really good case for him to go pretty high up for sure. I don't know if I buy him at like 3 to Boston. Like, I don't know if that's the right move for the Celtics, but I think, you know, somewhere in that range after that, I think makes sense.
Yeah. So in terms of his upside, like, what do you think his best case scenario is?
Yeah, I mean, he's a weird player. Like, I was talking to one scout about him, and he, like, couldn't really think of a good comparison. He was like, maybe a Terrence Jones, like, something like that. Like, you know, a guy, I think it really depends how much he wants.
Terrence Jones is right. We got to go higher than that on the ceiling right. If we're going top five.
Right, exactly. Like, I don't think you're spending a top five pick on Terrence Jones. He's a little different, but I think it's just going to be, like, is he going to want to adapt to that physicality? Like, is he going to really be a power forward? Because, like, you know, it matters less to be a tweener now, I think, than it did right. 5 years ago. You know, if you can score and, like, do some stuff on offense. But, you know, defensively, he's also going to have to, you know, figure out, you know, who's going to guard.
He was blocking shots, which is a good sign.
Right, that's a good sign. Exactly. So it's just a matter of, like, you know, how is he going to adapt to, you know, having to play against gigantic people every single night. It's not something that everyone takes well to. You know, it's not the Pac-12. And I think it's going to be... definitely a learning curve, but there are a lot of guys like that in this draft where I feel like you're taking them and hoping in like 3 years you get something back, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Chris is, I like Marquise Chris a lot because he's exciting in that, like, he could absolutely be like a Stromile Swift, Tyrus Thomas kind of disaster.
Yeah.
And, or, I mean, he could definitely, I could see him growing into a great small forward or power forward, or I also think he's got a lot of tools to be like a fun small ball five at some point down the road. And he's athletic enough so that you can project him all over the place.
Right.
And the main reason I like him is because, like, when you compare, like, when you really dig into the rest of the lottery, it's tough to even theoretically project a lot of these guys as all-star level players. And then, but Chris is a guy who there's definitely a route where you can see him growing into like just a monster. And that's more than you can say for most everybody else in this draft.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if you're looking at like the rest of the guys, like in that range, like, I mean, I think I'd rather have him than Jaylen Brown.
Yeah, exactly.
And I feel like,
he's a better version of Jaylen Brown.
Right. I mean, yeah, they're a little bit different. Like, I think Brown is, you know, going to actually be on like a perimeter player right away, but it's like, in terms of outside,
like, they're both so raw where you kind of have to, like, it requires a leap of faith to talk yourself into them as top 10 picks. But yeah. Like Chris, it actually makes a lot of sense.
Exactly. And it's like, if you're a team, you know, that's not, you know, ready to go right away. I mean, if like Buddy is there, you know, Buddy Hill is there, or if it's like that, or, you know, take a shot on Chris. I mean, I think, obviously positional needs and stuff are always a factor. But, I mean, why not take that home run swing if you know, have the time to wait on it?
So what do you think the Celtics do then, deciding? Because it sounds like, I mean, shout out to Rob Pelinka, Marquise Chris's agent. He's gotten him solidly into the mix in the top five. And the workouts have all been pretty impressive, apparently. So what do you think Boston will want to do at 3 as Chris and Dragan Bender are both pretty unknown quantities here.
Right. Well, I mean, I think their first, you know, and second and third preference would be to try to move that pick, you know, because I know they need a star. They know they need a star. They're going to be in the market for that. Like, I know, you know, Kevin Durant, they obviously would love to, you know, get that guy. I mean, if they keep it, I mean, I like the idea of Bender a little bit better, you know, if they take that route where, you know, where it's going to take a guy and give him a couple years. Because, you know, they do need help at power forward. Neither of those guys will probably be that guy right away. But, you know, right. Bender is at least kind of, he's been a pro for a while. You know, he has played, you know, at the highest levels overseas. You know, he's a known quantity. He's not like people like to call these, you know, European guys mystery men every year. I don't think he's that. You know, people know what he can do. And, you know, 7-foot playmakers are kind of in vogue right now. You know, if you can roll the dice on one of those guys, I mean, I think it's definitely a valid choice. So I like the idea of that. You know, I don't know if I've ever seen like a top 3 pick, you know, get kept overseas, but like if they wanted to keep him over there, they probably could. And, you know, they have right. so many picks that I think, I don't know if that's what they will do, but I think that might be a factor as well.
Yeah, it's interesting because the Celtics have had so many draft picks over the past few years that like the roster is full now. Like they've already got Terry Rozier, they've got Kelly Olynyk, they've got a lot of young guys, Marcus Smart, and there's only so many people that they can add from this draft. Even though they come in with another, they've got I think four or five picks in the top 40. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of room for Danny Ainge to move, and it's tough, man. When you talk about Boston, like they just haven't been able to, they've had these assets the last few years and they haven't been able to make much out of them. And I think I agree with you. Bender seems like a more stable choice. He's bigger, and his shooting from the outside, he shot a lot more threes than Chris did. Chris shot a decent percentage, but Bender, I think that shot is more dependable. And then he moves really well for a 7-footer, which is a good sign. And not necessarily that he's going to be a star, but that he can be like a starter and he can make sense on the court, because a lot of those guys just don't look comfortable in their frame, but he does. So that said, I mean, I still don't know. Like he is still kind of an unknown quantity to me, because it's just it's always tough to judge those guys as they come over. Maybe that's just my own like European bias, but it always seems like kind of a roll of the dice.
Right. Yeah. You know, I saw Bender play at All-Star Weekend at the Basketball Without Borders camp in 2015. And he was like clearly the best player, you know, at that camp. You know, Jamal Murray was over there. I can't remember who else. I think there was a couple other guys who are kind of in the mix now, but Bender was clearly the best prospect there. And he just is a guy who like makes the right plays. He's not like a crazy highlight reel guy, but I think that he, you know, his instincts are really good. You know, he's not that similar to Kristaps Porzingis. Like, I hate that people are like, oh, maybe he's the new Kristaps. That's so lazy to me.
It's
like,
tough.
All right, come on. Like, they're European, but, you know, give him a break. But yeah,
well,
I mean, Boston,
and what's interesting is that actually, like, when I say he's a roll of the dice, he is a lot more dependable than the American Marquise Chris. I mean, I think everybody is sort of gambling on Chris, but Bender definitely seems like more of a known quantity to scouts than Marquise Chris.
Yeah, you know, Chris didn't have that same type of exposure like in high school. And I think it's like, it's weird to say this, but like playing in the Pac-12, you know, those late games on Pac-12 network, like not a lot of people are sitting enough to watch those live, you know, even if you're an NBA scout, unless you're out there out west, you know. So I think a lot of people, I think that's also part of why he kind of has crept up the board slowly. He kind of started off in a wide range of places because people hadn't watched that many Washington games. Like I didn't watch that many Washington games. I watched it all, you know, back on Synergy, but I think that's a factor too. And Boston's in a tough position. I mean, like you said, I think just like, you know, they need to make a trade, but everyone knows they need to make a trade. So that's not the type of, you know, economic position.
I also
where
just
you
don't
have
think
leverage.
That the number three pick is that valuable in this draft.
No, because there's so many ways you can go with it. And yeah, I mean, they definitely needed to get one of those top two picks, and they kind of are in a very tough spot, I think. Tougher than anyone would kind of realize they'd be.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, they like Jimmy Butler, like you're not going to get Jimmy Butler for the number three pick. You're not going to get, or I mean, who knows? It sort of depends on how desperate those teams are to make a move. But Paul George, Jimmy Butler, I don't think the Kings are going to trade Boogie before they open this stadium. And in that case, the Celtics are better off just using this and hoping that this turn, like whoever they get can turn into a star in the next three or 4 years.
Right. Because like the most NBA ready player for them at number three is probably Chris Dunn, but like they don't need another guard, like period. Like that's
Chris Dunn feels a lot like Marcus Smart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like you don't want to rank all the feathers of like the seven guards you already have on the roster. Like that's the pick they don't even make. So it's kind of tough for them. Like I really don't know what they're going to do. I'll be interested to see if they can find a taker for that pick.
So another team that is interesting to me, a lot of people have talked about the Celtics, but I want to know what the Suns are going to do, because the Suns had an absolute shit show of a season last year, but they actually have a lot of talent. And I mean, when you look at like number one, Devin Booker was one of the two or three most impressive rookies last year. Eric Bledsoe will be healthy. Brandon Knight is solid. TJ Warren is a favorite of mine. He's a cult hero, and I am a cult of one. And then Alex Len, Tyson Chandler. I mean, there's some pieces to work with. I don't know if we can still count Tyson Chandler as a piece to work with, but so what do you think they do it for?
Yeah, I mean, it'd be nice for them to not have to play two centers at a time. So, I mean, I think that...
that was pretty brutal down the stretch.
Oh, man, that was rough to watch. Alex Len and Tyson Chandler, not really the ideal fit for the pace and space NBA, I don't think.
Right.
So, I guess, I mean, no disrespect to Mirza Teletovic, but I think, like, finding someone long-term to fit at power forward would be good for them. You know, they don't, you know, Booker, you know, is good. They've got Bledsoe. They still have Knight. It's like they have all these guards. So, I mean, I think that, I mean, if Bender is there at number four, I think that's a good pick for them. I mean, I think you also have to think about Henry Ellenson. A lot of people are kind of down on him, but I like him. I think Ellenson's like more ready than people think. I think that watching Kevin Love suck at defense in the finals, like for the last 2 weeks or in the playoffs has like kind of hurt Ellenson's stock quietly. Cause like,
yeah,
you know, everyone's like, oh, he's poor man's Kevin Love, and Kevin Love sucks at defense. So it's like kind of an interesting like corollary there. But I think he can score. I don't think he's a bad pick.
I also think that Alex Len is a pretty ideal five to have next to someone who is going to struggle, particularly with interior defense,
right.
Or I guess perimeter defense would be Ellison's issue more than anything. But I mean, Len is a good anchor.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think Ellison, if you can, you know, I think there can be lineups where you play him at center. You know, he's big enough to at least, you know, stay with guys enough. You know, you teach him some stuff on defense, and those things can be taught. So like, you know, he's
yeah.
So
if you could teach Ellison to play the five, and he grows into that role, that makes him pretty valuable.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's why I think you have to think about him that high. I mean, it is a risk. You know, I mean, it's kind of become a trope, like, oh, this big guy has slow feet. Like, can he play in the modern NBA? And, like, that's valid. But I do think, like, he's very talented. I think he's a better passer than people think. I think he can, you know, handle the ball okay. You know, he's more versatile than people saw, maybe even at Marquette. You know, that team was still kind of rebuilding a little bit, too. I think people kind of forget that.
Yeah.
You know, that was not a perfect team either. You know, like, we say that about Ben Simmons. Like, oh, LSU was so bad. You know, how much do we put into, you know, Simmons being lethargic on the team being bad? And, like, you know, Ellenson wasn't really put in a position to show.
It's interesting also when you talk about the modern NBA. When you hold guys to that standard, basically like the Warriors standard, and be like, well, could he stay on the court in a Warriors series? I mean, that wipes out like 75% of this draft.
That's right.
Which is tough. And I don't know if that's how we should be judging any of these players. Just because, frankly, I mean, even the Cavs, who are very, very good, just are completely outclassed. So basically, like, I don't know if you can look at guys that way.
Yeah, it's like the nuclear Warriors effect. Like, but yeah, I mean, also, you know, they may not be the same, you know, for these contract situations kind of shuffle out. So yeah, I mean, I think that's a great point. Like, why are we, you know, not every team is building itself just to hopefully get to the finals and have a chance to beat the Warriors. Like, there's a lot of other, you know, other outcomes that.
And it feels like basketball Twitter has conditioned everybody to be like, we need two-way players. Like, you have to be able to play three different positions and do everything. And I mean, that's just not the way most basketball players work.
Right. Right. Yeah. And I
It's tough. I mean, I feel bad, like, but there are going to be certain guys who are great offensively, and like their ceiling is like a net zero on defense.
Right. Yeah. Cause then we look at guys who are so defensive minded, like, oh, he's so tough. Like, you can still put him out there and he can guard three positions. But like, if he can't score, like Andre Robertson, like, all right, he had a nice little run in the finals, but like, you know, that's the one way defensive player. Right. So why are we treating, you know, these guys who are, you know, one, maybe not necessarily one way, but the offensively gifted guys sort of. It's a weird double standard, maybe, that we're creating, maybe because of the Warriors. It's kind of awkward.
It's a little tough. Another idea I have for the Suns is, rather than drafting the next Kevin Love, just trade for Kevin Love.
Ooh.
And I'm not sure how they would do it, but basically, I think you could either put you could also put Kyrie on the Suns, and they'd be interesting. Because I think Eric Bledsoe makes a lot of sense for what the Cavs need. And if you flip Bledsoe, he's also a Clutch Sports client.
That's right. That's what I was going to say. Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah. Like, I'm trying to dig into the Illuminati factors here. I mean, I think that there's room for the Suns to absorb one of those players, certainly. And Love would make sense too, because there's a giant hole at the four.
That's right. But I mean, here's the thing. Would the Suns trade away a player who went to Kentucky when they can just draft Jamal Murray and just, you know, fill out that Calipari roster and open that job up for him whenever he wants it? Like,
yeah, that's right. Calipari in the desert. Here we go. That would actually be kind of fun.
Hey, and, you know, Scal might be there at 13, so they could just go all in if they really wanted to.
Wait, who's at 14? Who's at 13?
I said Scal. Livesier might be there at 13.
Oh, God, that's right. Yeah.
They might be able to out Vivek.
Yeah, we
got to
talk about Scal.
Get Boogie to Phoenix.
Scal's someone who I was willing to talk myself into like a month ago, and the closer we get to the draft, I just can't get into it.
Yeah, I can't either, because there's just too many people raise the question to me, like, does he know how to play basketball? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, he had flashes, but like everyone has flashes. Like, I don't know how much time you can invest in him. Also, because he's a little bit older, you know, and I mean, with guys like that, I was thinking about it. It's like, if you're investing, you know, time, you know, in developing a big like that, who's just so raw, by the time they get to the point where they can really help you, their first contract is up and then you're paying them. You know what I mean? Like, think about it from a financial standpoint.
Oh, yeah,
totally. I
was thinking
about Bismack Biyombo. You know, by the time that they're able to help you, they're on their second contract and you're outpriced, right? So it's a risky run, I think.
Yeah, I love Biyombo and always have. But this summer is going to get weird. All right. I have more questions here. This is all stuff that I confront with mock drafts. The Wolves at number five. Like, what do you think they want? What do you think they need?
Yeah, you know, I mean, they are kind of in a position where I think they can go best player available. They're kind of, you know, obviously, they have a good cap situation. They got Tibbs now. You know, I think they'll probably take a player, you know, who fits his philosophy, like, defensively. I don't think they're going to, you know, take a pick on a guy who Tibbs doesn't think can, you know, handle that, you know, the rigors of, you know, what he's going to put that team through. But I think Jamal Murray is an interesting fit for them. You know, as a guy who can, you know, really space the floor, I think that's the one component they're kind of missing, is they need a dead-eye shooter. I don't think Wiggins is going to be that. You know, if they can get a guy who's going to knock down a shot, that can really change, you know, the dynamics of the floor. You know, Levine's getting better as a three-point shooter, but I don't know that I see Levine as ever like a really reliable, you know, floor spacing guy. I think he's more valuable driving and attacking the basket for you with the ball in his hands. So, I mean, I think Jamal Murray makes sense for them if he's there. And he fits, you know, he's another young guy, you know, fitting in with that group of guys. And, you know, Wiggins is from Canada, Murray's from Canada. You know, you get those ties in. And
that's right, the Canadian connection there.
Yeah, so I think he'd be, you know, really good at number five just from that standpoint of, like, making them even more fun. I mean, Chris Dunn, people have talked about Chris Dunn at number five. I mean, does that signal Rubio's exit? Maybe. But Dunn also fits what Tibbs wants to do. You know, point guard who can drive, you know, make plays and play defense. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of where I am right now, is I feel like Dunn does so many things that are like classic Tibbs grinder stuff that it's hard to imagine Tibbs passing him up. And he also makes sense as a backup point guard right now, because Rubio has had trouble staying healthy. Rubio, there's been trade rumors, and I think they'll hold on to him through at least February, but it makes sense to invest in some insurance either way, whether you're talking about trades or injuries. But, right. I like Murray more, and people have sort of, I don't know, it seems like people have soured on Murray strictly because of his athleticism and defensive concerns. But, like, defensively in Minnesota, I mean, you're putting him next to Andrew Wiggins, who's should turn into an excellent perimeter defender, particularly under Thibodeau. And then at the same time, Karl Towns is gonna be an anchor there for the next 10 years, right, and will be, like, an amazing defender. And right. So as far as like the dream situation for Jamal Murray, I feel like you're not going to do much better than Minnesota. And then I also think he's just got that he has a higher ceiling than almost anybody else in the backcourt in this draft, where like a lot of guards have had athleticism questions over the past few years. And we've seen a lot of them pan out great. I mean, whether it's Harden, Steph Curry, CJ McCollum, I mean, I don't think athleticism should really should rule him out, particularly since he's used to not being as athletic as the defense. And like, even in college, he had to find creative ways to score. So I don't think it's going to be like a huge adjustment being a little bit slower and having to be a little craftier in the NBA.
Right. And you know what? And I think there are very few teams where there's not someone on the floor that you can, you know, I mean, you can usually hide somebody like that, like if you need to, and especially when you have a Towns and a Wiggins and Levine, who's 6'5", 6'6", you know, I think you're right. I think that's a good fit. From that standpoint, you know, I mean, a lot of teams play shooters. You know, you can be like, hey, Jamal, go stand over there. Don't let him, you know, shoot a 3-point shot. And I think, you know, simplifying that in a Tibbs defense too, which is going to be a strong team scheme, you know, I think that's a pretty good fit for him. But I think either pick is interesting for Minnesota. And I'm ready for the alternate future where Ricky Rubio rejuvenates his career on the Spurs. So,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, I want great things for Rubio, whether it's in Minnesota or any or somewhere else. Like, we still need like a great 3-year stretch of Rubio.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm ready for him to, you know, go replace Tony Parker and suddenly get triple doubles and throw lobs to Kawhi.
Yeah. Hey, I'm on board. Let's do it. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So we've made it 25 minutes without talking about Ben Simmons or Brandon Ingram. We should probably fix that. But before we do, quick word from our sponsors. Are you thinking of proposing? I support that idea. Now, what about that ring? If a proposal is in the cards for you, you need to check out Ritani. All of their rings are handcrafted in New York, and you can shop online and they'll ship it overnight to you or a Ritani jeweler close to you. And if it's not exactly right, you can return it with no hassle. This is ring shopping on your terms. There's no pressure. There's no pushy salespeople. And you design the ring on their easy-to-use website. They handcraft it, and then you choose to get it delivered to your home or to a jeweler. It's that simple. Give the perfect ring and feel great about doing it. And this month, they're giving away a diamond. Just visit Ritani.com, Ritani.com/sports today, and you can get a free diamond giveaway. So there you go. And I will say that engagement ring shopping can be pretty stressful. I was completely unprepared for that process. So check out Ritani and make it easy. And so now let's get back into it. Simmons or Ingram? It seems like we were 50-50 for about a month there. And now everyone has conceded the top spot in this draft to Ben Simmons. Where do you stand right now?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean,
first of all, we should say that it's all signs point to the Sixers taking Simmons, but where are you?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I can see it both ways for Philly. I mean, I do think I've come around over the last couple months to Ingram as the better prospect, just because I think, you know, the league is headed in that direction, you know, a big guy who can handle the ball and shoot, you know, at 6'8 or 6'9. I mean, that's pretty valuable. He's going to score the ball. You know, he might, you know, score more points than anyone else in this draft. And I think you really have to think about that. And, you know, he's going to fit into your team. He might eventually be able to play, you know, stretch four role, you know, as he bulks up. You know, I don't usually worry too much about concerns about weight, because, like, what player didn't, you know, with the NBA regimen, like eating, you know, exactly what the team wants you to eat all the time, you know, doesn't beef up. You know, I'm not so worried about that. And so I guess my biggest concern with Simmons is just, like, I think he's of the vein of guys where super talented, but you kind of got to put the exact right combination of players around him to maximize your success. You know, I think about like a James Harden, you know, guys who just need the ball, who are very unique players, unique talents. And you can win with them, but you got to like do it the specific way. But the Sixers, I mean, they're in a position, you know, financially, you know, they got the hinky laid it out for them. You know, they got the flexibility, and you know, they have trade chips. You know, they should, if they are smart and they want to take Ben Simmons, they have, you know, the time and the resources to build a team around him, you know, the way they want to. So I can see it both ways for them. I think Ingram is the better prospect, but I won't fault them if they go Simmons. But they better have, you know, the next few moves kind of thought out too.
Yeah. Do you feel like Simmons has a higher ceiling and that's what's happening here?
I don't know. I mean, I think Ingram's ceiling is pretty high. I mean, he's, you know, he's only 18, you know, you know, he's younger than some of the guys that are going to be in next year's draft.
Yeah.
I think you might be.
No, I mean, I agree with you. I think Ingram, it's almost like people considered him underrated, and there was a lot of buzz through like March and April, and now he's back to being underrated again because everyone's talking about Ben Simmons. And I still think Agram, especially if he ends up in LA, will be a lot of fun to watch and can do a lot of great things. And, you know, we talk about his weight. Like, he was like, I don't know what he actually weighed, but he looked like he weighed like 170 pounds at Duke. Mm-hmm. And not only did he fight all year, but he got better as the year went on and he played his ass off. And like, there are just a lot of sort of intangibles that weigh in his favor. Whereas Simmons, my thing with Simmons is I get it. If you think he's going to be like a point forward somewhere between Draymond and what LeBron has done over the last 10 years, like if you think he can be somewhere between that and run your offense, I mean, that's a lot of where the NBA is going is those rangy forwards who can do everything. But the jumper is going to be an issue. And I mean, you talk about Draymond, like one of the reasons he's so great is that he's a threat on the perimeter.
Right.
And that's not Simmons. And then at the same time, another thing with Draymond and with someone like Giannis, who's another guy who Simmons has been compared to, they're great defensively. And Simmons wasn't that and doesn't have, he's not crazy athletic. He's decently athletic, but he's not like a freak like Giannis. And his frame is not, like his wingspan is not outrageous either. So like, what do you think his ceiling is defensively?
Yeah. You know, I think that's a super valid question. I think that's where a lot of the sort of, you know, questions are rising from. I mean, I think, you know, there's something to be said for him as a mismatch. You know, I think you're going to have to put him on the ball, you know, to maximize his talent. You know, I don't think he's going to you know, do well. If you stick him in the corner, he's not going to, you know, be a threat from there. You know, I think if you're taking him, you're committing to playing him on the ball. But then again, right. So then he can't guard point guards. You know, he might be a point guard offensively, but then you have to find someone to hide him on. You know, he's not really fleet of foot necessarily to where you think he can stay with an NBA small forward. You know, he's not really bulky enough. You know, if teams go big, you know, to stay with those guys. So I don't know what you're going to do with him defensively. And that's part of why I'm getting back to, you know, you got to build a team around him where you can cover for that too. So it's like, you know, you're creating a mismatch for the other team, but you also are almost creating your own sort of figurative mismatch that you have to account for when you're building that team around him. So, I mean, defensively, you know, all he has to do is really, if he can become an adequate team defender, that'll be enough. You know, if you can get the right guys around him, you know, like we're talking about in Minnesota, you know, with Murray, same concept. But there's just a lot of questions, I think. And, you know, how much does he want to play defense? You know, that's the other thing that people, you know, keep raising those red flags just with his competitiveness and, you know, how much he really wants to, you know, come in and work and do that.
Yeah, I mean, I can't decide how much we should care about his competitiveness, but I will say that it's like, it's one of the best signs with Ingram is that he had every excuse to sort of disappear, particularly at the beginning of the year when he honestly looked like he was 16 years old playing in the ACC. but he kind of got better and fought hard and showed up in the tournament. I mean, in the ACC tournament, as the season went on, and the NCAA tournament, like he was great. And granted, like he was playing against Yale, so it's hard to like read too much into that. But I think the intangibles are there with Ingram, whereas Simmons, you're sort of betting on potential and past hype and tools. I mean, his basketball IQ is kind of off the charts. So I don't know. If I were the Sixers, I would take Ingram, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I would too. I think it just gives you, you know, more flexibility. And I think bottom line, he's the better prospect. And
it's just easier to build out the rest of your team.
Right. Exactly.
It's weird because Simmons has so much talent, but if you put him in the wrong situation where he's expected to save things from day one, and he's not necessarily surrounded by talent, like it could break bad a little bit. And I mean, that's like exactly where the Sixers are. Like, he's going to come in and people are going to be like, okay, the process is over. Our savior is here.
Right.
And then it's going to be like, okay, why can't our savior hit a 15-foot jump shot?
Right, exactly. I mean, you can look at like D'Angelo Russell this year, like kind of the hype reversing and eventually leveling out, and then, you know, the whole, you know, Swaggy P thing. You know, I don't think Simmons has a history of snitching. Yeah. But you know, it's just, I think that's a very valid point too. I mean, you know, there's talk that Simmons is maybe a little bit, you know, enjoys his own hype a little bit. And I think he's a good kid. You know, I got to know him a little bit a couple years ago, you know, before he, you know, kind of burst onto the scene and everything. And I think he's going to be okay.
Yeah.
But it's sink or swim, you know, when you get to the league. And I think it'll help him to be, you know, at least in LA, in a situation where, you know, he and D'Angelo Russell were high school teammates. You know, if he goes to LA, he may have a better, you know, support system like that. You know, Philly, we've seen guys like, you know, Nerlens and Jahlil kind of, you know, have tough times. And, you know, again, I don't know if we can treat last year's Philly as like this year's Philly with the new infrastructure.
That's a good point, too. Yeah. It will look very different.
But then again, if you're, you know, turning a, you know, 19-year-old who thinks he's a superstar loose in LA, you know, you have the same types of questions. So, you know,
yeah.
I don't know how much we can put credence into that yet.
Yeah, and I just, I feel like I had to vent a little bit because I still like Ingram. But it will be fun wherever Simmons goes to see how his game works, because it's just such a crazy mix of skills and weaknesses, frankly. Like, if he is the 6'10 Rondo, like, I can't wait to watch him play and try to make that work in the NBA. And and as particularly if he, I mean, it looks like he's going to end up on the Sixers. He'll make the Sixers so much more fun just to watch that I'm in. But I just feel like we were asking questions about his game like 6 weeks ago that now everyone is kind of overlooking, and he's being talked about as like a guaranteed next superstar for the Sixers. And I still think there are a lot of interesting questions that make him anything but a certainty.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for me, none of that's gone away for me either.
So we'll see. I don't know. What jumps out at you from the rest of the lottery as far as it's like just sort of interesting questions here?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think it's a little bit watered down. I think, you know, the early knock was just that this is a bad draft. You know, I don't know if, you know, that's necessarily the case. I think there's some depth, but you know, when you look at the rest of the lottery, it's not, you know, there are not a lot of guys who are sure, you know, that's why we were talking about Marquise Chris as a guy who is rising. I think it's just because of the, you know, everyone has risk and his reward, I think, is pretty high. I mean, I'm curious to see what happens with Jakob Poeltl, because I think he is pretty good. You know, he's huge.
It's weird. It's like so many of the teams that are in the top 10 just don't need centers. So he's kind of falling a little bit, but, right. I think he can help as soon as next year.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I was watching him kind of late in the season, and like I was getting some like Gasol vibes just watching him kind of, you know, naturally kind of move around in the post. And given it wasn't against, you know, other 7-footers, and I know I'm not saying he's Pau Gasol, but I think that he has good instincts, and I think there are not a lot of true centers left who can really do that. And I think there's still value in that. And he's big enough to where even if he's never going to like, you know, be necessarily a shot blocker, you know, if you can get him to just play in the team concept and be big, you know, that should be enough to, you know, get some use out of him. I think he makes sense. Like in Milwaukee, for example, you know, they kind of need a center. You know, the Greg Monroe experiment didn't quite work out yet. I think that could make sense for him.
What do you think they'll do with Greg Monroe?
Yeah, it's tricky. I mean, you know, can you trade him now, you know, kind of at the bottom of his value after, you know, people are seeing that it doesn't work there. I mean, I kind of would like to see them try again with him, but if they're going to play Giannis as a point guard, then you got to have shooters around him, and Monroe is not that. So it's going to be interesting. I mean, I'm not sure who's going to come in and be like, hey, we'll take Greg Monroe off your hands, but you know, maybe a team with cap space that can afford to wait a little bit, you know, because I think he's still a good player, and I think he has yet to find the right situation too.
Yeah, I like him off the bench almost in like an Enes Kanter role, but starting, it just like, even coming into the year, everyone was looking at the Bucks like, this isn't going to work. And then, shocker, the defense fell off dramatically and it just all kind of fell apart. So I don't know. I mean, part of me with Milwaukee, my thing is I just want that roster to get as weird as possible. And Poeltl would be kind of like a conventional pick, which is fine. But I don't know. I think grabbing someone like Wade Baldwin or Timothy Luwawu might be more fun for them.
Yeah, totally. I mean, Luwawu would be cool just having all these giant wing players just running around.
Yeah, like a bunch of 6'8 dudes just like swallowing teams.
Yeah, just play no center. Have Giannis try to guard centers and just have, you know, a bunch of big
I'm
dudes
in.
Run around.
I'm in on that Bucks team.
Like, why not?
No centers necessary.
Why not? Someone's going to try that. I'm sure someone's going to try that.
I wonder what the Raptors are going to do also.
Yeah, I mean, there's talk they might trade that pick. It seems like, I don't think that's a bad pick for them. I mean, the fact is they have time to, I think they're in a position where if they want to take someone, like if Chris is there and they want to develop him, you know, I think that's fine. You know, I don't know if it's really worked out with Bebe and Bruno. So get another project in there.
That's right. That's kind of the issue. They don't, like, they could take Scal, but they already have Bruno. Like, they don't need another, like, 180-pound, 6'10 dude right. who is going to take 4 years to turn into an NBA player.
Man, remember Bruno? That was great. I'm waiting for Bruno to come around.
Yeah, of course. We all are, man. That was honestly, that's one of the most shocking moments of the recent draft history. It's Bruno Caboclo.
Yeah. I mean, I think maybe, you know, 3 more years, we'll get to see him. I don't know. I don't know what's going to be, but I mean, I could see them.
There were some signs. He popped up in the playoffs a few times. I was surprised.
Yeah, Bruno and Bebe on Instagram were very entertaining, or at least they were last time I checked. I don't know how that's going. But yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, they could be justified in trading that pick. You know, it sounds like DeRozan's coming back, and they need to upgrade, you know, at power forward. You know, I think Toronto, you know, they had a really good season, and I think they, especially with Cleveland looking kind of feeble right now, you know, I think that Toronto is not in a position where they need to say, let's take a step back at all. You know, I guess Lowry has 1 year left in his deal. You know, that could get interesting. But I think they're in a position where they can, you know, take a guy. The problem is I just don't know in that range if there's anyone who's ready to come play right away. But Luwawu also I think could be interesting for them as an extra wing guy. But then again, they have Norman Powell, who's kind of a similar role. So
do you think if they let DeRozan go, it like how far of a step back do you think that would be?
I think that's significant. I mean, if they let DeRozan go, I mean, do you think they keep Biombo, first of all? Like, I don't know if you can really pay two centers in big money.
Yeah.
So
it's tough because Biombo makes them just so versatile off the bench and was so huge. But yeah, I don't know about tying up another $60 million in the center position.
Right. So like if both of those guys walk, I mean, I think it's definitely a step back into that tier below at minimum, just because I think it makes them a lot more one-dimensional offensively. I mean, you know, you saw what they look like when they struggle. You know, and they didn't have a ton of shooting. You know, they have a lot of, like, nice players, but not a lot of, like, scorers, really. I mean, Lowry and DeRozan were really the only scorers. I mean, Valanciunas, I think, is very good. I think we're going to see him, you know, take another step forward. And he'll have to, you know, if DeRozan's gone. But I think that would be a huge blow to lose him, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough. And I feel bad for them because this is like, a bonus lottery pick. And it just so happens that most of the guys with high upside, I mean, there are three or four guys who you can project into the All-Star game at some point. And then the rest of this, I mean, almost from 7 or 8 down to like 25, it's, you get a lot of guys who look like they could be very good rotation players, but, not necessarily starters or not necessarily stars or even starters,
right?
Which is tricky.
Yeah.
So you wonder what they could even get for the 9 pick.
Right. Yeah. In this draft, I mean, it's going to have to be, I think to make a trade like that, it's going to be someone who really wants a certain guy, you know, who wants to like swoop in. And those are the types of things where I think you don't really find out until late in the game. And then it's harder to negotiate, you know, I think so.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I mean, maybe they reach down and get like a Denzel Valentine or a Sabonis who might be more ready to play now. Sabonis Valanciunas front line. I don't know how that's going to look, but
yeah. So along the lines of the Raptors and just like not many great options, do you think this draft just sucks?
You know, that was kind of the overarching thing at the start, but I think once you get into like maybe 20 through 40, I mean, I think there are a lot of good players. I mean, I think it's just a role player draft, and I think we got to temper expectations for a lot of these guys. But I mean, I do like a lot of the guys who are kind of in that middle of the draft. I think it's actually fairly deep when you get down there. And I think that teams that are picking in that range are going to be, you know, very well positioned to get a useful piece. And, you know, the other thing is that, you know, the cap's going to jump. And so the rookie scale is also going to jump. So like finding somebody who can give you something with a pick like this is important, because you're going to get five cost controlled years on a, you know, significantly different contract scale. So, you know, I could see teams maybe reaching down. You know, no one really knows what the hell is going to happen, I think, when you get that late. And, you know, it could be a total free for all. But I think there's definitely value.
Yeah, it's definitely chaotic. And I agree. There are a lot of good options as far as role players. But it's hard. I mean, like last year, like every year I get pretty into the draft and wind up talking myself into like 15 different guys. Last year I did that and almost everybody wound up looking great. I didn't even talk myself into someone like Devin Booker or Miles Turner, and they turned out to have fantastic rookie years. So it's tough to compare that draft where we got like 9 or 10 guys with all-star potential. Mario Hezonja, just like the rock star that we never knew we needed. and then at the same time, this year, it's just kind of, I don't know, it's a little bit of an anticlimax, because the more you dig into this draft, the more you see a lot of guys who are imperfect and drafted in the top 10, you're like, it's hard to get that excited. But then if you go down to 20, you're like, well, there's a lot we can work with. So I feel like the expectations will end up shaping a lot of the way these guys and their careers pan out. And that's not necessarily fair.
Right. Yeah. And especially coming off of like a top heavy draft like last year, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I think hopefully, you know, people, you know, coming with some realistic, you know, perception of what it's going to be. Like, I know it's harder to get excited and being like, oh, like, you know, we drafted, you know, Wade Baldwin. He's going to be a really good defensive guard for us for 5 or 6 years. You know, it's like not the same thing as like, oh, he's going to turn into the next Russell Westbrook. You know, and hopefully people are, you know, erring on the side of caution.
Yeah, like Buddy Hield. Buddy Hield at like 15 would be fantastic. Buddy Hield at number 6 is a little tough to get too excited about.
Remember when people were saying that Buddy should be the number one pick because he had like 40 in the tournament or whatever? Like, I don't know about that.
Yeah, it was quite a time. There was a lot of buzz for Buddy Hield at number 3 after Ingram and Simmons, and that has died down a little bit.
Yeah. Time heals all.
Which is probably healthy. But then at the same time, I mean, you look back, one of the worst drafts I can remember was at the time, 2011. And that's when we had Biombo, Jan Vesely, Derek Williams was the number 2 pick. Mm-hmm. But from that same draft, Klay Thompson, Kawhi Leonard, Jimmy Butler. So like maybe those guys are in here somewhere.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I guess that's sort of the eternal challenge. Like we don't really know, you know, what it's going to be. No one really knows. And that's always the first thing to remember. I think anytime you're even reading anything about the draft, it's just like, oh, this is all just what someone thinks. It's not concrete.
So give me along those lines, because we really don't know. There are a couple guys I really like. Give me a couple names from the first round that you definitely like.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in on DeJounte Murray. I just think he's super talented.
Are you really?
I am. I think he's super talented, man. Like, He can score it. You know, he's got really good size, really good ball handling. I think I was watching some tape and it's just like the mistakes that he was making are, you know, aggressive mistakes. It's not like he's tentative, like, oh, what do I do? It's just like, you know, sometimes he'll drive and get stuck in a spot. And like, I'd rather have a guy, you know, mess up like that. I mean, I think that in terms of like guard upside, I mean, he could end up being, you know, one of the best guards in this draft. But no one seems to really know, you know, exactly where he'll go. You know, there's talk he might have a promise in the first round.
With Murray, I get kind of I get too many Tony Roden vibes. But then at the same time, like Tony Roden had John Wall tools, and I would definitely, if there's another chance to have Tony Roden's career work out vicariously through DeJounte Murray, I'm in. I mean, yeah. I, like, that's definitely worth it once you get past like the lottery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that could be a home run pick. I mean, I like him. I like Ulis. I've been a Ulis fan since Tyler was like 17, like watching him play in high school. And, you know, I don't know if he's going to be a superstar, but he doesn't have to be. You know, I know he's little and I know he weighs like 100 pounds, but
yeah,
you know, he's a basketball player. And just I don't think turning the keys over to him and, you know, backup minutes, like if you use him like a JJ Barea, you know, I think that's a valuable player.
Ulis is amazing because, like, we've joked about Brandon Ingram weighing like 170 pounds, Scal weighing like 180 pounds, whatever. All those guys actually weigh like 200 plus. Ulis is legitimately 149 pounds, yeah, which is just shocking to me.
Yeah, he actually lost weight between the Kentucky season and the combine.
Like, that's legitimately like eighth grade level.
Yeah.
but I agree. I love him. And like, that's one of the things that I've had the most fun with in these mocks is projecting him onto different teams and where, like, whether it's Memphis, whether it's the Pacers, whether it's the Celtics, the Nuggets, the Sixers, like, mm-hmm, I will love him no matter where he ends up, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, if he like falls to like the Spurs, that'd be awesome. Like,
There's just no situation where Tyler Ulis won't be fun next year.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So I mean, I like him. And I think another guy that we both like is DeAndre Bembry, who I think should be able to help someone like fairly quickly. I think he is a little undervalued.
I don't understand why he's not going in the teens somewhere.
Right. Cause like,
I mean, like the guy can, he can pass, he can score. He's long, he's quick on defense. I get that he can't shoot threes, but like you couldn't ask for more to work with as a wing. And then if you can teach him to shoot threes, like he's a starter for a solid 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I mean, I think if he had played maybe at a bigger major conference school, you know, I mean, St. Joe's great program, you know, good history of turning guys out, but I mean, how much different is he, you know, than a Denzel Valentine, you know, who obviously has a, you know, stronger pedigree, but like they kind of have the same knocks. You know, Valentine's a better shooter, you know, but I don't know if there's that wide of a gap between the two of them necessarily.
Well, or even someone like Jaylen Brown, granted, is 19 and has a ton of room to grow. But like, I feel like we penalize guys who are 21 and 22 years old, which like, I realized this the other day. I mean, Draymond came into the league at 22 and people were like, well, he's topped out. But now, like 4 years later, he's 26. He's gotten worlds better across the board. And again, he's still plenty young and has plenty more time in his prime. Like, I feel like we overthink this in terms of how much room guys have to grow.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think, you know, this year we're also seeing, I think, a lot of the, you know, the upperclassmen are guys who have, you know, significantly improved over their 4 years and like used their college time well. I mean, you could look at Buddy, you could look at Valentine. I mean, Bryce Johnson, you know, finally put together a good season as a senior. You know, these upperclassmen are guys who, you know, have at least been certainly developing, you know, in college. It's not like they have been, you know, stagnant stocks for 4 years. So I think you're right. It's a little bit of an unfair rub sometimes. And you got to look at every case, you know, a little differently.
Yeah. I mean, the one guy I really like outside of the ones we've named is Taurean Prince.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's another player who is big enough where you can project him as either a three or a four and he can help you a ton. And he's got a great body to help out defensively. And then Wade Baldwin is like my guy.
mm-hmm. I know you love Wade.
He and Ingram are the two players from the top half of the first round who I really think are going to be very, very good and help good teams. And then beyond that, there's like a ton of questions in the first round.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Baldwin's interesting.
Would you want him on Chicago?
Baldwin, I mean, you know, I can see it. I mean, I think they could use another guard. You know,
Jeremy is a Bulls fan.
Right. Yeah. You know, all things considered, I mean, I have a lot of mixed feelings about the Bulls that I have not fully reconciled. Have not fully reconciled yet. But I mean, I think of Baldwin, his upside, like kind of like a super Patrick Beverley, you know, a good defensive guy. You know, you can stick him on both guards. He can hit an open shot. Like, you know, I'm okay with that if he's going to be that. Like, I think if there's some safety in that, you know, I think that's a fine pick. You know, I think there's definitely value just in, if you feel secure about a guy in this draft where there's so much, you know, fluidity and like stuff that people don't, you know, we don't know what to expect. I mean, I think that's a fair pick at the back of the ladder if you're feeling good about that.
Yeah. Where are you at with Bulls management right now? Like, what's your trust level? Because they've drafted really well in the past,
but
then at the same time, they've just been torturing you.
Yeah. Well, the last two drafts, you know, have not been as good. I'm kind of, I don't know. I mean,
wait, are you not in on Bobby Portis?
Bobby Portis is all right. But like, I mean, Tony Snow, don't love him. McDermott.
Right.
I think,
yeah,
I don't know how much better McDermott's going to get. You know, they've only been taking guys from New Mexico and Iowa. And you know, that to me is, you know, a little scary. I mean, I'm ready for, you know, Jared Udoff and Pascal Siakam or whoever to be on the Bulls next year. But, you know, I think they're at a crossroads. And I think that, you know, the patience is going to start running out, I think, at this point, just with all the stuff that's come out. They're kind of past that goodwill territory with a lot of the Bulls fan base, it seems like to me.
Are you Team Rose or Team Butler?
Oh, man. I mean, I'm always going to like ride with Derek. I mean, it's not his fault necessarily that he got hurt. But I also don't, I'm not buying fully into like Jimmy ruined this season either. I think it was just a lot of, you know, weird things happening at once. And I think that this season will be a better litmus test of like where they're actually headed. Like, I think in like after about 15 to 20 games, we'll have a sense of like what the deal really is. But they have some cap flexibility too. So if they can find some bigs, you know, if Powell's gone and Noah's gone, you know, let Portis start. But they got to find some bigs, you know, get Biombo to Chicago and see what happens.
that's not a bad idea. Look, I think wherever Biombo ends up, he's going to be a lot of fun to root for.
Absolutely.
I was talking to another Bulls friend this past week, and I was surprised. They said basically, if you think about it, it's going to be hard to build a title team around Jimmy Butler. So selling high right now might not be a bad idea.
Yeah, you know, I'm okay if they decide to trade him. Like, if they feel like they're getting good value for him, you know, if they feel like, you know, that situation has built to where it's worth going in a different direction, you know, I think that's fine. I mean, I think Rose also, he's still not that old. Like, I think that there is more value to be had with him. You know, I don't think he is necessarily like peaked, but you know, it's also tough to feel great about him. And like, I don't know when his contract's up, like if they're gonna, you know, what he's gonna be asking for, you know, if they're gonna want to pay him. But I mean, I don't know what, you know, you're gonna get back for Butler, but there are not a lot of stars in the market right now. And you know what I mean? Like you said, with Cousins and their arena and their new coach, like I think that he's probably staying put for a bit. I mean, it might be a time to strike if there's a team thirsty enough to, you know, do that.
And also, I mean, if they were to really like tear things down and rebuild a little bit, like next year's draft is loaded.
Yeah. Next year's draft, I think, you know, there may not be necessarily like one surefire like guy at the top. I mean, Harry Giles, you know, he has his knee injury, so we'll see how he looks at Duke. You know, he was kind of, people thought he was that guy. But I think there are a lot of guys like
Josh
in the lottery.
Jackson.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys in the lottery that are going to be, you know, good players. And that, it's interesting. That's the kind of tier of talent that this draft is missing. Like the guys who are like that next tier, you know, type of prospect. You know, I think we could use more, like three or four or more of those guys this year would help.
Yeah, I think that might be the move if you're the Bulls, is to basically be like, take a realistic look at the roster and say it's time to try and reset a little bit. But having said that, like, I don't trust them to do, I have no idea what their priorities are after the last few years. However, now that we've dove into the 2017 draft, it's probably time to wrap things up. Thank you for indulging me. I just wanted to bounce some draft talk off somebody and, take a little break from the finals. So I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime. I think, you know, there'll be more to talk about as this gets closer. So
yeah, we're about to, as soon as the finals end, it's about to get really real. But Ben Golliver and I will be back on Thursday and talking finals. And Jeremy, thank you so much. I will talk to you soon as the draft gets closer.
All right, man. Sounds good. Absolutely.
All right. Take it easy.
Thanks for tuning in to Open Floor's inaugural draft episode. You can follow Andrew Sharp at Andrew Sharp and Jeremy Wu at Jeremy Wu. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcast app of choice. And you can hear the whole SIA podcast network at si.com/podcasts.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.